Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Candle Guys. Tonight, or this afternoon, or no pod time, because again, I'm learning that podcasts have no time. We're going to continue on our candle journey. Joe and I are going to, we have a guest tonight. Our first guest. And our first guest is from the fragrance industry, Pete from Zen Ingredients. He's here so that we could start talking about the most important, the active ingredient in our candles, what makes us all different, what we're here to strive for, is making a professional air care product. And we can't do that without fragrance.
Right, Pete. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks for inviting me, gentlemen. I appreciate it. And it's nice to be part of this podcast for today. I've been in the fragrance industry at different levels, starting with sales and moving on to my own company for the past 22, going on 23 years. And I've worked in almost all the aspects of fragrance production, fragrance use, fragrances in general for products from candles, other air care products to personal care products, and just about anything that's scented. So I have a good amount of experience, and I work with a lot of candle makers today and in the past as well, creating new fragrances, troubleshooting, helping them with waxes and some other issues that they might have. And it's something that I really have a passion for, and I'm really happy to do and glad that I'm doing.
Great. Yeah, Pete and I met probably about that 23 years ago. We were the young bucks in the candle business, hanging out with the older guys, listening to their wisdom, gathering all the information we could along the way. And I think Pete met a lot of good people along the way to help him where he is today. So what I want to talk about first is, you know, some of the different categories of fragrance out there, different trends that may be coming up, but get some input on what you consider the categories and what trends may be coming up in the near future.
Trends are, they're always a good place for people to look into and see, as you said, what's coming up for this year or for next year. And a lot of times people ask, so where do the trends originate from, and how are they put together? Who foresees these things? And why would that be interesting to me to look at that and possibly include something from those trends in my line of products? A lot of what one sees as trends that comes from the fashion industry, the home interior design industry, and industries along those lines. Pantone Group, for Pantone colors, they always pick a color of the year, and it's one of the best ways to nail down colors and understand, you know, what colors might be trends and what people do from there. As far as fashion might be concerned, is they will team fabrics with certain colors. And then we in the fragrance industry look at it. It's two, the fragrance is part of an image, and we follow those keys also. And same with interior design, and look at textures and again colors, and we put an aromatic touch on those ideas as we see. Let's just say a material like cashmere, you know, that could be something that we then design a fragrance around, which is a bit of a fantasy type fragrance. It could be, but what does that mean? What does that fabric? What does that evoke? And how can that translate into a smell?
Right.
And what might that mean?
So you talk about,
and also food as well.
You talk about fantasy fragrances. I heard that term, gourmands. I've heard that term before. What are some of the other categories that fragrances fall under?
Some of the other categories are floral, fantasy, as we said, fruity. Then there could be floral fruity. There are woody, musky fragrances, and some that are as far as a perfume category might be concerned. Some could be geared towards one gender or the other. And a lot of that is based on what, again, what trends one might see, or what categories, if someone is putting together a line of candles in this case, what groups, what categories do I have represented here with fragrances, and what I might not have, what might be missing, what kind of holes might I have in my aromatic lineup of my offerings, my fragrance offerings for candles. And that can go as well for colors too. And the fragrance and the color, they go together if one is adding color, whether it's to the wax itself or the vessel that the candle is in, how those pairings might, one might put one and one together there.
Right. So, Jamie, from your point of view as a candle maker, how do you look at trends?
Again, we have marketing departments. I've run across many different marketing departments that are getting all sorts of feedback from major retailers, as well as there are a lot of reports available to the professionals. I mean, they cost a lot of money. You could find that some what's called Mintel reports and that break down the whole categories, tell you what the majors are doing, how things are going by company, what the trends are going to be. But those reports could be anywhere between $15,000 and $20,000.
Oh, yeah.
To see how what's drilling down in the major retailers across the country. And as Pete said, every major fragrance house has their own marketing department. And part of their marketing department is they make their own trends for the year. They're updating their customers. They're seeing what's going on in the marketplace and in America. You know, we came through a pandemic. And again, what are marketing people going to do? They're going to make lines like staycations, things that we do around the home, memories. They take what's going on in everyday life and start putting fragrance stories to those things. So as a more of a wider candle maker, we use that to design different lines and hopefully cohesive lines along the way so that we can invoke some type of emotion with the fragrance in a certain direction. So, Pete, as a supplier, do you have most of your people asking you for certain fragrances, or do they ask you for direction? How does it usually work from your perspective?
It can work in various ways. Many times we will follow some of those trends that are gathered from the world, from fashion, from the Mintel reports, from other aspects, and create a line of fragrances around what some of those trends might be, whether it's a flower, a color, a mood, the pandemic, and things along those lines. We'll put a collection together and we may send that out to some clients if they don't have something particular in mind, which we then will help them along with. And fragrance is it's a very personal thing. And people, they have different feelings about fragrances, different likes, different dislikes, what it may remind someone of. And if someone is looking for a particular fragrance or a particular number of fragrances, we will definitely work with them and try to understand what it is that they're trying to do with this fragrance. What is this fragrance going to do? Is it a food type of fragrance, a gourmand type of fragrance? Is it something, at what time of year might it come out? Is there a holiday associated with it, a time of year, a season? And we'll help create something unique and a signature aroma for their needs.
So do you work with a lot of the distributors out there who you kind of go to them with your trends and offer them? Because a lot of our smaller candle makers will go buy from their distributor or their candle making supply house, and they're kind of relying on them to know what the trends are. So how far in advance would you generally work with a candle maker or the distributor on, you know, announcing new fragrances?
Once the information is available, or we'll put something together, it could be months in advance, up to 6 months, or some clients are working already on 2023 at this point. They might be working on summer a year ahead, depending on the size of the company, the type of company that it is. As far as a candle distributor company is concerned, providing customers with fragrances and waxes and wicks and containers, typically a few months in advance. And yeah, we'll provide the same information to them and say, these are what the trends say. And we'll also do sort of a map and gap analysis of what they have currently and where they're strong and where they might have a few holes that we can help fill, and what their client feedback is as well to help them get the best offering available to their client base.
That's interesting. So now I'm going to a distributor. I'm a crafter. How do I know that what that distributor is going to be selling me is going to be compatible with my wax if I didn't get it, let's say, from that distributor? What do I have to do as that candle maker to start looking at that from your perspective?
Well, as you two have been instilling since the inception of the candle guys, is test, test, test. That's always going to be the case in your particular wax, wick, container configuration to get the most out of it. The whole thing is the system, and each part of that candle system has to function in order for the next thing to make it work properly. What we do is it's hard. Some of the distributors, it's hard because what they are looking for in every fragrance is a Swiss Army knife. It has to work in a candle, and that could be in any of the waxes they sell or in any of the waxes that are out there, theoretically. And not only that, let's just say it's a vanilla buttercream fragrance. It also, people want it to work in a lotion, a hand soap, a hot pour soap, a glycerin soap, a shampoo. It has to do all this multitasking duty. Yeah, and so yes,
actually,
it also has
to happen. It's actually harder to deal with a distributor of some sorts instead of dealing one-on-one with a manufacturer, it seems.
It is. It is, because if someone is a candle manufacturer and they come to us and they say, "Oh, well, we want a new amber and oud type fragrance," and one of the questions, of course, we'll ask is, "We'll definitely want to work with their particular configuration, their wax, their whatever wicks they have selected at this point, whatever containers they want to put it in, and we're going to help them build a fragrance around what they're using." What type of wax it is it a soy wax, a blend, whatever it is. And we can target that more specifically. And we've done, and we will do straight raw material, fragrance raw material testing in their particular waxes or wax, just to see what might work best in that wax. What materials are doing something within a formulation and what might not be, in this case, cold and when you set it on fire to burn.
Right. So
Joe, you brought up, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on you, Joe, but you really brought up a very good point between the novice crafter and as the more experienced people come on, because you just took the consensus of taking one particular base and being able to tweak it, work with it, do the back and forth to ultimately optimize the burn, which, when you just buy something off the shelf as a smaller crafter, you don't necessarily get that same laser focus. And that's where what Joe and I were telling everybody before, and back what you mentioned before, you have to test and you have to double check it and you have to see, because you as the smaller crafter is going to have to more or less do your own tweaks. And basically, for you, the smaller crafter, your tweak is going to be in your wick. You're not going to be able to ask for a different diluent, or the diluent being the base of the fragrance, or you're not going to be able to ask for to kick up a note something like that. So you're going to have to do that on your own. And the, again, that goes back to testing. And also, it goes back to trying different fragrances at certain times, because certain fragrances might work over manufacturers sometimes. And Pete, you could tell me if I'm right or wrong. When you make a fragrance, you have basically a template. And your template might not be the same as another fragrance manufacturer. And their base or their diluents for waxes might be slightly different. So again, that's where it comes in, the testing. And like, you would try many different wicks from different manufacturers. Sometimes trying fragrances from different manufacturers helps as well.
Exactly. You're right. As far as diluents or solvents are concerned, my approach is, it's just like Joe's approach, is probably one wick or one solvent is not always going to be the case. Many times we might make a cocktail of solvents or diluents that work to help solubilize all the materials within a fragrance. And that could be to wind up in the end with a completely solubilized liquid fragrance, which fragrance materials are everything and anything from a solid to a powder, to a crystal, to a resin, and a few other categories too, but absolutes and some other things. And in the end, it has to be a soluble liquid for candles that to help go into the base and mix properly and do the duty that it's created and prescribed to do, both cold and hot. Yeah. And there are a lot of ways to make a fragrance, just like you can go out and order a steak someplace, and you go to 10 restaurants, you're going to get 10 different ways that it's cooked, it's prepared, it's this cut, it's that cut. In the end, you know, which do you like? Where do you go? And then sometimes you wind up going to that restaurant or those couple of restaurants that you really like. And then the same case with the fragrance. There's a lot of work done, you know, before we send something out to someone. If we're making something specific, we do a lot of testing because we know that there are so many variables.
And people don't see that. You do a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And you do have a lot of tools at your disposal. Mm-hmm. So what people see in a little 6-ounce bottle or 1-pound bottle is not even close to the work or the effort that goes into it, into trying to make it the best whatever fragrance you pick for that item. And it's not an easy thing. I mean, I don't think a lot of people understand how, like, certain fragrances, how many ingredients can go into a fragrance?
Well, a perfumer typically has at their disposal anywhere from, depending on the company or how that one might do something, from anywhere from, let's say, 800 to 2,500 raw materials from which to choose to create an aroma, and some companies even more materials. But typically, and they can create what they need to from those materials. But typically, a candle fragrance could contain anywhere from, let's say, 20 ingredients to more than 100 easily. Wow. 150. It could be a lot of things. It depends on the intricacy of the fragrance itself, and of course, there's always the price point that plays a role as well. When we create something, that's a big factor too. In what price range is a client willing to work with them? What is their budget? What's realistic here? You know, what's the range? What does it need to do? What's their fragrance level that they add to their product, and how is it that they, what's their, in a lot, many times too, what's their manufacturing process? What are their temperatures? What's the high temperature, the low temperature that a fragrance will be exposed to in the manufacturing process? How are they blending it? And we want to take all this into consideration. So we want to, even though we're not making it for them in process, in their place, we want to understand what they do. So what we create can seamlessly flow into their process too and help them.
So you know, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is.
So you kind of mentioned it before, So it sounds like you've done some testing with individual ingredients to see how they affect the burn. Is that right? Because just like we recommend wick testing with your base wax without adding any fragrance in there, you get your baseline on how your wick performs in your wax without any interference from the fragrance. And then you can tell from there what the potential of the wick is. Is that the kind of the same testing you're doing on individual ingredients?
We are. We've developed a database of raw materials that we've looked at in some waxes, not of course all waxes, because there are they're numerous. So we'll take a couple of different types of waxes and get some data by just taking straight raw materials at various percentages, putting those raw materials just by themselves in the wax and smelling that cold, and then burning those and rating them and seeing what do they do? Are they contributing here? And if so, to what degree? And so we have sort of a baseline there of what might work and what's gonna really help in the cold throw, what's gonna come through in the hot throw as well.
Right.
And take that information.
What affects the hot throw and the cold throw? Is that certain levels of ingredients in the candle, in the fragrance rather?
Yes. Yeah. The, a fragrance, the raw materials used can affect the quality of the raw materials, the amount can definitely affect the end product in whatever the fragrance is going into. A shampoo, how does it, for example, it may smell beautiful in the bottle, and then when you are washing the hair and it's wet, we call it the fragrance bloom. What's the bloom there? How does it come off? So you're washing hair and it smells luxurious, or this, you know, what is it? How does it function? Same with a candle. Are these materials, how are they going to contribute, and to what percentage can we add that to enhance the fragrance to get the aromatic message across that the client wants within that particular fragrance?
You know, there's always an argument in the industry over what percentage fragrance should I put in my candle. Okay. And I hear through the years, people will say, oh, you got to put in 5%, price me out at 6%. Give me a 7% blend. And I've always said, and I feel that just plugging a number into something is a very difficult way to go about evaluating a fragrance. Do you see something similar? How, from your perspective, could you recommend a fragrance level?
Depending on the fragrance itself, first, you know, a candle manufacturer may say, you know, we use 5% fragrance load across the board. And they may very well be, that's perfect for them in their particular configuration. It works perfectly. They're selling these candles. They're selling a lot of them. And this is great. Again, some fragrances may, just because the nature of them, if you take, for example, a cinnamon or cinnamon, hot cinnamon or a cinnamon spice type fragrance, and try to compare that with a delicate white floral fragrance, it's a bit apples and oranges there. Because you might be able to use less of a, let's just say, a cinnamon fragrance in a candle to give it the same throw, cold and hot, as one might, let's just say, 8% of a floral fragrance, because it's just by nature, it's a softer type of a fragrance. They're not the same. And yeah, we can make that stronger. But the two they're still just different just by their own nature. The recommended fragrance percentage is something, again, that a company or a manufacturer, they sort of have to determine on their own, you know, how do they want this candle to, do they want it to burn it in a home downstairs and it to just blow out the entire 3,000 square feet of the house? Okay, we can help you with that. But for someone else, they're like, that is just, you know, that bazooka power it's just not going to work for us. You know, it's too much. We want something a little less assuming, let's say. We don't want to hit someone over the head that much with fragrance. And there are different opinions in between as well.
All right. And it goes back to, I'm sorry, guys, but it goes back to, again, testing, knowing what you want to make, having a baseline, and then jumping off from there. And it's like you just said, Peter, I mean, that heavier fragrance, I might only use 4%. That lighter fragrance, I might use 8%. But at the end of the day, the fragrance percentage that we're using, we're paying for. Mm-hmm. So it really behooves the candle maker to take the time to see the difference between a 5%, a 6%. Would you agree that fragrance percentage is not necessarily linear? In other words, there's no step up exactly from 5 to 6, from 7 to 8, from 8 to 9. Sooner or later, as you get towards a top end, is the quote unquote juice worth the squeeze?
Yeah, I agree. It's true. I mean, it's a point of diminishing returns when you get to a certain level. And also, how much fragrance can your candle wax hold? You know, at what point do you add so much fragrance that it starts to come out of the wax? It starts to look wet, the candle, whether it's on the bottom or the top. And at that point, what is it? You've got a puddle with a wick in it, and what is it doing? And we work with clients. Some people use anywhere from, let's just say, 1% up to even 20%. You know, depending on what they're doing, what they're claiming, how they want this to be. A little different in a wax warmer type situation. That's usually a higher level thing, but it's a different. It's not a candle per se, but people do go heavier there in general, and because that has a different effect. It's much more passive, as it just melts and emanates from there and diffuses in a certain way, as opposed to a candle with a wick system where it is where it's set on fire and then diffuses in that manner, and reed diffusers also. You know, again, another passive system where through evaporation, typically it's if it's a reed diffuser, or different if it's an electric type of diffusion system with a mist of some sort. Again, different levels. As far as candles go, it's pretty. It's I've seen it across the board, and again, it's something that one must test. And what is it that they're trying to do? What type of product is this? Price too is a big factor there, as well, as you mentioned.
When you talk about price, you mentioned like there are big or can be wide disparity in prices. And I don't think a lot of candle makers understand the difference between a lower end, let's say, strawberry and a higher end strawberry. What am I getting if I'm paying, let's say, $7 for my strawberry and there's a $15 strawberry? What's the difference in that $15 strawberry? Why should I be drawn to that?
It's, for example, a strawberry, a lower cost strawberry is something that that one can manufacture relatively inexpensively and purchase that as well. But what will it do? And what sort of aromatic part of a real strawberry will it smell like? It could be sort of like a one note wonder, just sort of a fruity, maybe it's a somewhat juicy aspect of it, part of the strawberry or not. As opposed to, let's say, a more expensive made strawberry fragrance, which might aromatically include every aspect of the strawberry, from the green part of the leaves to the ripe part of the skin, the juiciness when you cut it open or you take the first bite out of it, and what those kind of aspects of a strawberry, of the fruit itself. So is it an early season strawberry? Is it a very overripe one? Is it?
Yeah, we get the idea. And honestly, sometimes it's true. You get what you pay for. And that's why, guys, you will see different prices on fragrance.
So what are some of the recommendations you have for when you're adding your fragrance to your waxes? We talked about fragrance load, but now when it comes to adding your fragrance to the wax, do you have some recommendations there?
I think it shouldn't be added at the hottest temperature or the highest temperature necessarily. And some of that is, but it should be more mixed in, whether it's manually mixed or mechanically mixed, depending on what the process is, what one's process is. The temperature to which it can be added to the wax can vary also. But I think the solubility of the fragrance itself in any particular wax is something that's the most important. And if it's soluble at the highest temperature, it should also, it's got to be soluble all the way down from the liquid to the solid state.
Yeah. So, do you feel that fragrances are pass fail, like either it works or it doesn't work?
Yes. Yeah. Although a fragrance can be made to be soluble once it's already, someone already bought it, if the wax can only hold a certain amount, sometimes it might need a little help with an additive to the wax to help get the fragrance in there, to help make the wax more soluble, and which helps the fragrance to go into the wax. But typically, I'd rather know the process of a manufacturer and then create the fragrance around that, at least have some idea.
Right. So Jamie, maybe you can, have a recommendation. In the past, I've always added my fragrance on the cooler side and let it come to temperature with the fragrance in the wax, not necessarily using the fragrance to cool down the wax, like heating it at the, let's just say 210 and then adding fragrance, hoping it's going to drop. Jamie, what do you do when you're adding your fragrances? Do you have a certain, temperature, mid-level, high level that you like to add your fragrances?
Well, it also, like Pete said, it depends on your process, because different manufacturers that I've worked with put their fragrances in different ways. If you're going to inject your fragrance as a professional candle maker, there are candle makers that will inject their fragrance at the fill line. If they're doing that, they have much more temperature control. Years ago, for large fillers, everybody used to put the fragrance in a tank, and then they'd let it sit in the tank. Years ago, the recommendation was, make sure you mix it for 30 minutes, roughly at 160 and 170 degrees. But then you would walk into these candle plants, and the only thing you would smell is fragrance all over the place because they were volatilizing it. So over the years, you try and enter it as low as possible. Your method, that's a good method. I also think that the opposite is a little better in the fact that if you get your wax up to a little above your pouring temperature, then add your fragrance. So this way you're no longer adding heat to the process, just stabilizing heat. Your fragrance is going to last longer. Pete could tell you that being that there are 100 different components, possibly the different fragrances, heat affects each little fragrance differently, each ingredient, especially the lighter notes. So the downside of overheating your fragrance is not necessarily from a performance standpoint, or hurting the fragrance, it's more changing the character of the fragrance.
Yeah.
You lose those little high notes that make what you just paid money for disappear. So you have to really be careful to try and put it in as low as possible so that you don't lose those high notes.
Yeah, knowing the flash point of the fragrance itself, just as one knows the melt point of the wax, those are two important things to keep in mind. The flash point of the fragrance is the point where at what point does the liquid fragrance itself then become a gas or a vapor? What point does it turn to a vapor? And that's the flash point there. And as Jamie was saying, a lot of the top notes or the high notes are, in a lot of cases, the citrus notes. They have a lower flash point. Orange oil may have something a little over 100 degrees Fahrenheit flash point. And what part of a fragrance, how much of that is in a fragrance? I mean, as a user of fragrance, you may not know what percentage of it is. You can smell it, but sometimes it is many. Some larger candle manufacturers that I've visited over the years, some you can smell, you know, a mile down the road, because, as you say, that they're manufacturing at high temperatures in large open things, and many other ones you don't smell that much because they're adding fragrance or pouring the fragrance at a different level, a different temperature, and that works for them. And there's a certain amount that could be lost if a temperature is too high, but there's a happy medium there for incorporation. As Jamie said, it goes just somewhere a little bit above the pouring temp or right around the pouring temp.
Right, right. Well, it's another test that you can perform. You can pour a batch at the lower temperature, the higher temperature, and see if you're missing any of the notes that you're looking for. So that's a good recommendation that, you know, there's two different ways to try it, and they could do some testing on their own to figure out what's the best time to add it. Do you feel either one of you have a strong opinion on a wick selection and fragrance? You know, we know the candle is a complete system. Wax aside, do you feel that, and maybe not by name, but do you feel that there's different wicks that work better with different fragrances? Or is it kind of across the board the same and you just go up and down in size?
I think that, yeah, there's not one wick line or type that I could say necessarily that is gonna really enhance your candle. If you're not using this type of wick, then you know, your fragrance isn't gonna come off in the same way, or it's not gonna burn properly. That's not necessarily the case. I think a company that's making candles, or whoever is making candles, there are only so many wicks that you want to have for your line there in a particular size container, because it can be harder on the manufacturing side to ensure that, because the wicks, a lot of times they do look a lot alike unless you're very familiar with that. But again, with the testing, that's really the key. What do you find, Jamie?
Well, I basically find the same thing. I find that the wick selection is more geared to the wax base, and then that family will certainly work with most fragrances by upping or downsizing the wick. But then occasionally you will get a fragrance that won't live in that series of wick anymore. We all know in the candle industry, the vanillins, the vanilla base, the cinnamons, they always give a candle maker a difficult time. Also now with the more creative fragrances and adding different notes than were ever before can make, certain fragrances, more difficult to burn and work out of your series. And some of them become very, very challenging. So there's not necessarily, that's why we talked about having many different wicks in your toolbox. That's mm-hmm. why you need that for those outliers that can create those problems. I used to have a lot more hair before I started pulling it out with all the different new raw materials that are available. And also currently it's a very challenging environment for a professional candle makers in the fact that raw materials are very difficult for fragrance manufacturers to obtain. So people are substituting here and there, not on a quality basis, but based on the things that they can get. And when that happens, it becomes challenging for the candle maker to become flexible to test them and have those tools in our toolbox. Mm-hmm. And not to keep going overly as far as a wick series, it also depends on the pool temperature that you're looking to achieve. because the pool temperature gives the fragrance its lift. You could have the same fragrance and your pool temperature could be 120 degrees and your same pool temperature could be 180 degrees and it's the same fragrance and it's going to perform two different ways. We all know that there's a major retailer across the country that is known for their fragrances. But if you take a look at their fragrances and their candle systems, they always burn on the warmer side. It's hot. Okay. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they're looking to get as much out of the fragrance as they can, because of the more they heat it, the more it'll lift. And that's the way that they manufacture candles.
Do you feel that the fragrances are developed differently for that type of environment, or are they the same across the board?
I think that they are developed differently. Again, that's knowing the client and what their mandates are, what their criteria is. It's a certain companies, some they say, we want the full diameter of the container to be liquefied within 60 minutes. And okay. And they wanted to get to that point, and because they want to get as much fragrance into the air as possible. And that's their criteria there. But that comes at a bit of a cost too, because you need quite a bit of heat to do that, whether it's a single wick or a multi-wick type of a situation. But a fragrance can help that as well, and help ensure that it's burning at a certain rate too. It does contribute, even at, let's just say it's 8% of the candle is fragrance and 92% is wax, or some dye perhaps, or you know, however that works. And you know, so, but it can help. It can do a lot within the percentage.
Right. And you know, when you're evaluating hot throw, I guess it's key to actually take the temperature of that burn pool to figure out if you're getting enough. Say you're not getting enough hot throw and your temperature is sitting at 120 or 130. You can say, you know, I might want to up a wick to get my melting temperature up to 180 or 190. And that's where that infrared thermometer comes in handy, you know, so you can evaluate it that way. And just like we talk about having an arsenal of wicks, you know, maybe you do have four different vanillas that you sample and then evaluate them individually to see if you can find the right one. So I know different suppliers have different dupes of certain retail candles out there, but everyone has the staples out there. So you know, I guess we would suggest that you get a couple different of the same fragrance from different vendors, you know. By coincidence, maybe it's the same supplier, but for the most part, it's probably different suppliers that they get it from. One thing I wanted to mention in my experience with adding fragrance to wax, just to jump back for a second, you know, I asked if a fragrance is pass fail, and I've seen candle fragrances that are designed for candles that you add your fragrance and you have this little oil slick at the bottom, or it looks like water floating around in the wax. My personal opinion, that's a fail. That's something that can't be fixed by, you could stir it real fast and distribute it throughout the wax, or you can put a heavy mixer in there and mix it real fast. But if it falls out in your liquid form, I know that it's going to come out in your candle form, and that could be dangerous because we don't know exactly what that is. And Pete, if you've experienced that before, what is your opinion on if that's, you know, kind of a failure and you should move on, or is there some way to rectify that?
I think if one sees that upon adding the fragrance to the liquid wax, that it's separating, or it is like an oil and water situation almost. Either there's a couple of things that could be going on there. One, it's just too much fragrance for that particular wax to safely absorb, and it really to force it in there is probably not going to work. The fragrance itself, it could be designed for a different type of wax fragrance load, or it could just be the wrong type of fragrance in general, that it's designed for a different product. Let's just say I've seen it also a mistake happen with someone has put a fragrance designed for a water soluble product, like a shampoo or a soap or something like that. And then they've put it in to the candle and it's a different solvent system there. But that's typically a telltale sign that it's not going to work. And when the candle solidifies and two separate, if they separate, whether it's a pool on the bottom or a pool on the top or both, it's not a good look there. And it can only get worse over time. When you see that in the beginning, as soon as the candle solidifies, those problems only amplify over time. And if one is shipping it in the summer, let's just say that will add more problems to it. So I would go back to the drawing board on that.
And what would you play with it?
What's that?
I would say do not play with it.
Don't play with it.
Throw it out. Go to the next one.
Go to the next one. So that's something we've talked about when it comes to wick testing, that when you finally find that fragrance you love and the wax that you love and the wick that works well with both of them, don't change anything. If you're going to go into, from your bench to the production, leave everything the same. Buy the same wax, buy the same fragrance from the same supplier that you decide on. Use the same wick that you found works best. Another thing I want to get your guys' input on is, what is, when it comes to valuing fragrance specifically, what is your what is the ideal testing environment?
Well, Pete, you could give us first how you guys internally in the fragrance industry evaluate a candle fragrance.
We'll set up typically an internal panel of people to smell the fragrance oil. We may dip some blotters and smell it and describe it in that sense. And then as far as the candle goes, we will then put it in the specific wax and we'll smell it cold. We'll then put it in, there's a couple of ways to burn test it. We have the burn chambers that Jamie has described in a previous podcast, but let's say a burn booth, that's a specific square footage there that it will like an old phone booth approximately, and you can burn it in there in a controlled environment and just gauge how that works, which is not typically how one might use a candle in a home. But and then many times we'll take candles, it would burn it in a room within our facilities, and we may take them home and burn them there and put them into real-time test how a consumer will use it and gauge it that way.
And what's your time burns? Jamie had the 4-1-4. I had the burn for 4, 24 off, burn for 4 again, then burn for 8. What's your criteria generally when it comes for test burning?
We're gonna burn it for 4 hours at a time typically. And every 15 minutes or so, we'll have a test sheet that will outline the specifics of the flame, the throw, the look, the temperature. So we'll assess the health of the candle as it's burning, and also rate the throw and see what we come up with there. And when we feel it passes the tests sufficiently, then we'll send it out to the client to then do their own evaluation. But at least we'll provide the same data to the client. So we'll let them know we burned it for X amount of hours and, we used your wax and we went down the line that way. And it's ready to be tested by them.
That works out well. And as long as you're consistent and you do it the same way time after time, then you have a benchmark. There's no exact science, but it's repeatability becomes the key. He did mention panel testing, which means that there are other people going in to get involved. You're asking for their feedback. At home, if you're going to create an in-home panel, if you're going to send it to family members or wherever, when you design your questionnaire, think about it. Don't lead people anywhere. Leave your questions so open. Did the fragrance perform as expected, better or worse? Give people scales. Did the fragrance name invoke the emotion that the real fragrance did? Not lead them in a certain direction, but leave everything open, give it a scale. And then after a while, you'll get the hang of the repeatability and the feedback so that you know what to adjust. It'll also help you again on fragrance levels, which adds to your cost, adds to your profitability, so that you know what you're doing and putting in the right fragrance loads that you want to. He mentioned before, he said sometimes there's fragrances could be too overpowering. So you want to avoid that as well. So that evaluation process really becomes not only an emotional one, it's also an economic one as well. So you have to watch that.
Right. We were at a conference. I think Pete was there. There was a candle conference many years ago. And we sat on a panel where they sent around the same scent to, it had to be 50 to 100 people. And everybody wrote down what it smelled like. And let's just say it was vanilla. It came back banana, rose, cinnamon. Everyone had a different opinion. So having that panel of, you know, friends and family that can evaluate for you, and even in the professional sense where they do it with a panel, that, you know, everyone interprets fragrances in such a different way that it's important to get, you know, that question that you said, does it represent what the fragrance is called? You know, that could be key in, you know, making your decision.
You know, I've spent a lot of time in stores, and when I'm in a store and I go near the candle section, I usually hang out in the corner. I know it's weird, but I'll hang out and I'll watch how people will pick up a fragrance or pick up a candle. And what you see all the time is they'll get it. They'll see something. They pick it up. They open it up. They smell it. And then they look at the label. So then they go, they want to know theoretically, okay, I thought that's apple. Is that apple?
Right. I guess right or wrong.
Right. Okay. So everyone is doing, even at the shelf level, an evaluation.
Right. Right. My wife always knows where to find me when I get lost in the store.
I'm in the same department too. And the laundry detergent aisle and all that as well. Smelling and observing too. Not in a creepy way, but in a learning way. I'm interested to see how people, how they perceive something too. And you wonder sometimes, you know, how did this fragrance or this finished product, whether it's a laundry product or a candle, how was this one selected or why, you know, it passed enough things where they say, okay, we're going to launch this. It's going out there. And, if you look at laundry, you know, it's a whole litany of things, you know, apple, mango, tango, gain. It's an interesting thing. You know, it's an interesting approach and people seem to love it. It's been around and it's established, but to get to that point, a lot of times there's a lot of testing involved when you get to a consumer product level like that, but
right,
you can, right. People can test that on their own to a different degree as well to see, is it going to be liked and why?
Yeah, well, speaking about spending times at stores, I can't tell you how many times I've seen, especially at more gift shops, boutiques, the higher end stores, where they'll have a nice proprietary candle line that you'll see, let's say, five very nice white candles, and then they see a sixth one that's starting to turn yellow. And from a fragrance company's perspective, can you explain to people why that's happening?
It's happening for a number of reasons. That's typically the whole candle is oxidizing. And a lot of times in a retail environment or in general, one can see if it's in a store, for example, or sometimes they put candles in the window, the front window, sometimes the yellowing or the discoloration can be influenced or sped up by light of any type, from store fixture light to sunlight. And that's pretty obvious sometimes, where one can see like a certain part of a candle, the front facing the light or the top of it is turning colors, but yet underneath it's not. That can be accelerated that way. Typically, if it's a complete reaction that the whole candle is turning as it in as one, pretty much. And sometimes you could see the wick tab is a dead giveaway too. If you turn a candle upside down, if you can see the wick tab, it'll look like it's rusting and it's being impacted. That metal is being impacted by various fragrance ingredients. Typically the ones that give a lot of the sweetness or the gourmand type of fragrances or sometimes the cinnamic aspects of a fragrance, they can attack the bare metal that is the wick tab. Once the discoloration starts there, it can also go from the bottom up. And again, over time, it's only going to get worse. Some of that can be controlled with the addition of an antioxidant, a UV light stabilizer, but it depends. It depends there on how to fix that. A lot of times the fragrance can be redesigned to minimize that.
Right.
And as a small candle manufacturer, you're not gonna have the tools to pre-test. Mm-hmm. You're not gonna have that UV light box. You might not have that oven to accelerate heat over time. So be aware that this can be an issue. You may want to add a UV protectant to all of your candles. That's something you can get in, and we'll probably talk about later. Yeah. But the point here is, if you see that in one of your fragrances, as you go to your own stores or follow up on your own product, you'll know when you see that yellow that you want to do something about that. Bring it up to your fragrance manufacturer or to your distributor, and see what they could help you get back on the right path so that you have a good look across your product line.
Right. Yeah, and then that's also a key sometimes when it turns color, that the fragrance itself is changing. Typically, it could be in a negative way as well, as that oxidation continues, as if something rusts. It may start just a little bit of rust, and then it can rust and just crumble and start to fall apart. A fragrance has a lifespan too. It's comprised of a lot of things, essential oils, many times some other materials too. And those all can be affected by heat, time, and the wax, a wax blend. Sure. of various type. And Joe knows a lot of ways as well. If one sees a wick sustainer, that might be oxidizing, turning colors. There are ways to use certain materials there that can solve that problem too.
Yeah, most wick tabs are tin plated steel, so they have a coating of tin on top of the steel to reduce this from happening. But there are some exposed edges, so sometimes you'll see it. There's also an aluminum tab option, which is very expensive, and not a lot of people want to pay for it, but it does practically eliminate it. But you know, those are for the people who want to pay a little more for that. But in the general scale, you'll get a tin-plated steel from your distributors or directly from the manufacturers. But with that said, it's time to wrap it up. Pete, we really appreciate you coming out here. Give yourself a plug for a second so everybody can have your information and inundate you with sample requests.
that's fine. We love to talk to people. My company is Zen Gradients Group, and we can email me at peterco@zengradients.com if you have questions or you'd like to see something, or we can just talk as we are here. And gentlemen, I really want to thank you for inviting me and having me on the Candle Guys. It's been an honor. It's great.
Thanks for joining us, guys. Everybody out in podcast world, thanks for listening. We hope, again, you're a little smarter after this than before this. And we're glad to be able to do this for you and with you.
Yeah, we look forward to the next podcast. We are on Instagram. My daughter just put us on TikTok and what's the other one?
Do I have to do something silly now that we're on?
No, TikTok? You're already on it without even knowing it. Yeah, we're on.
Do I have to light myself on fire or something?
No, I'll send you the clip. She's pretty good at it. So we're on TikTok, Instagram, working on a Facebook page now. In the podcast description will be a link that you can send us a message with your questions. We got a couple so far, just, you know, more praise that they're liking what we're doing. And we hope to continue to educate you on further issues. I know we promised wax this time, but we have a guest for our next episode, hopefully to speak about waxes and their chemical composition and all that good stuff. But Pete, thanks again. Jamie, thank you. And we'll talk to you next time.